Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s. And each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
This is the Funville 9, driven by AAA, the official podcast of the Richmond Flying Squirrels. Here's your host, Trey Wilson.
Hello and welcome to episode 12 of the Funville 9 driven by AAA. My name's Trey Wilson. I'm the Director of Communications and the radio broadcaster for the Richmond Flying Squirrels. And here on the Funville 9, we take you behind the scenes with the faces and figures from around the Flying Squirrels world. On this week's episode, I'm joined by Flying Squirrels catcher and Richmond native Matt Wynn, who spent parts of the last four seasons of the Flying Squirrels. Wynn grew up right here in Richmond, out in the West End, graduated from J.R. Tucker High School before heading out to play college ball at Virginia Military Institute. And back in 2016, Wynn made his debut for the Flying Squirrels and became the franchise's first ever player born and raised right here in Richmond. To date, he is one of only two players from the greater Richmond area who have played for the team. Pitcher Connor Overton, who grew up in Hanover County, was with the Flying Squirrels for parts of the last 2 years. It's rare in baseball that you get a chance to play at home. Even for those of us who aren't players who work in the industry, a job relatively close to home is pretty hard to come by. It's the type of industry where you're always going wherever there's an opportunity for you to work. And I know this pretty well. Growing up in the Hampton Roads area of Virginia, I then bounced around in the early years of my career through West Virginia, Michigan, and Pennsylvania before everything fell into place to bring me back home here to Virginia in late 2018. And even on our current front office staff, not everyone's originally from Virginia. But I think if you asked around, everyone would tell you there's something special about a Richmond that makes it feel like home. We've seen many people who moved to the area to work for the Flying Squirrels front office, and even if they eventually moved on from the baseball industry, they made a permanent home here in the Richmond area. And we've seen some players and coaches even who've loved it here so much that they stick around the area year-round, or even make a permanent residence somewhere here in the Commonwealth. Those of us like the players and myself who spend so much of our lives on buses or in hotel rooms and towns all across the map, we cherish the limited time we get to spend with our friends and family, especially during the season. For Matt Wynn, his professional baseball journey has placed him with teams in Arizona, Georgia, and California, but in every year of his professional baseball career, every full year so far, he's gotten to spend at least part of the season playing for the Richmond Flying Squirrels and living right here back in his hometown. Over the last few years, Wynn has often used his platform as a member of the Flying Squirrels to give back to his home community. You'll never hear him brag about it, and he'll probably even deflect some of the credit to others, but Wynn spent quite a bit of his free time during the season volunteering around the Richmond area. And he was even named the Flying Squirrels Community Service Award winner back in 2019. During a wave of minor league cuts across baseball earlier this summer, Wynn was released by the San Francisco Giants. Although he's staying baseball ready in case another playing opportunity comes his way, he's working on some plans for his post-playing career, and unsurprisingly, those plans involve serving others in our community. We'll talk about that and a whole lot more in our chat with him on today's episode. So with no further delay, here's my chat with Flying Squirrels catcher Matt Wynn. Matt, thanks so much for taking some time to join us. How's everything going? Where are you these days?
Everything's going good. I'm in Richmond working out, helping coach a travel ball team, doing lessons here and there. Kind of in the middle of the interview process with Chesterfield Fire, but just trying to stay in shape and trying to be ready for whatever comes my way.
For you, I know you've been at the Diamond some working out. Has it been a little bit weird not having baseball this year? I know you were working out with Sean Jelly some up at the Diamond, mm-hmm. and just it was this constant cycle of not knowing for sure if the season was going to be canceled and trying to stay game ready just in case that came along. It seemed like that'd be a tough spot to be in.
Yeah, it has been weird. I mean, me and Barney talk about it all the time. I see him, he comes in and works out sometimes around the same time I do, and we talk about it all the time, like, oh, we should be in Bowie right now, we should be going on a 6-hour road trip to Erie or whatever. Yeah, it's been weird. It's kind of the first summer that I've ever had ever since I started playing baseball that I wasn't playing baseball. It's definitely not normal for me, and it's not normal for anybody that's been in the baseball world for as long as I have.
Yeah, I know what you mean. This is the first time, mm-hmm. just as even working in professional ball, I think it's the first time I've had a full summer free in a decade, mm-hmm. and it's definitely been an odd summer, and hopefully we'll have it back to normal next year. But you're talking about playing baseball as a kid and how long you've been involved with baseball. Well, how did you get started playing baseball? Is it a game that you were a big fan of as a kid?
Yeah, it kind of started as I grew up here in Richmond, and I played with the Glen Allen Youth Athletic Association, and my family was always a big fan of baseball, and I kind of got started doing it. When I first started doing it, I was pretty good at it, so I continued to play, and that was really the only sport I ever did play. I wish I would have played more sports, because it probably would have made me a little bit more athletic. I might not be catching, but no, I have always enjoyed it, and I enjoy the fact that it's not a fast paced game, but you're able to kind of really think about it. And if you know the game well enough and you know the strategy about it, it becomes fast paced if you let it.
Well, were you always a catcher as a kid? Is that the position? I know that kids obviously play all over the place, but at what point did you become just focused on catching?
I think the first time I put on gear was when I was 10 years old. I played everywhere. I played third. I played a little bit of outfield. I pitched a little bit, not successfully, but I pitched. Mostly, I think after I first put it on, I always wanted to kind of be part of the game, and I always wanted. I thought other positions were boring because balls weren't hit to me, or I didn't have the ball in my hand. So I always asked to be behind the plate, and nobody else really wanted to. So I always got that job.
I don't think very many people in baseball would argue that catchers do more work than probably anybody else on the roster, right? It's a pretty selfless and thankless position. You have to spend mm-hmm. a lot of time doing work with pitchers and trying to balance getting your own work in for hitting and defense. Yeah. And over the years, I've met a lot of hardworking catchers, but man, you really get after it, right? Like,
I try.
I think the example that really cements it in my mind was late last season. We were on the road up in Erie, and we had just gotten hit with this absolute downpour of a rainstorm. It was raining about as hard as I think I've ever seen. And Jake Eisenberg and myself, we were sitting up in the radio booth, you know, nice and dry. I was probably eating a snack or something, and we're looking out through the haze and fog and all this rain, and we see somebody jogging laps around the field. And eventually, the person got into sight, and it was you. And we thought maybe you'd do a couple laps or something, but you just kept going in this insane driving rain. What drives that work ethic for you?
I honestly don't know. I just enjoy doing it. I believe that might have been a time where I was inactive, so I wasn't just expending energy for no reason. So I was like, I got to get my workout in or whatever it was for that day. But I've always enjoyed working out. I've always enjoyed doing stuff that other people don't really like to do. I mean, that's half the reason why I started catching, because I just like to do things that aren't necessarily normal.
Well, that day in particular, I remember thinking, like, there's nobody else out there. You're the only person on the field. The warning track's becoming like a moat, and it's like running in the middle of a hurricane. So if anybody can get out there and get after it, if anybody can get out there and get after it, then that, there's probably not a whole lot that's going to hold them back from getting in the work that they need.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we had just found out that the game got canceled, or I think I just assumed it was going to be canceled. And I think we were staying back because pitchers had to throw. They were throwing like sides or whatever. And we had to wait until it started to, like, the rain slowed down. So I was like, you know what? I haven't got a workout in today. I might as well go for a run.
Yeah, some serious dedication.
I think Beachy was out there too at some point, but I think I stayed out there a little longer than him. just as a point of pride.
It's like you said, like nobody else is doing. Just push it further than anybody else. Growing up here in Richmond, you went to J.R. Tucker High School out there in the west end of Richmond, I guess, on the eastern side of, or I guess the western side of Henrico County. J.R. Tucker High School, you had a really successful high school career there, and you ended up going off to play college ball at VMI. How did you end up going to Virginia Military Institute out in Lexington for your college career?
Well, so nowadays, the way that baseball kind of works for high school kids is you kind of have to play travel ball, and you get seen by a lot of guys out there, and you go up and down the East Coast, sometimes West Coast, if, just depending on what team you play for, and you get exposure that way. But for me, I just play Legion ball. So I played for Post 361. Ike, who is now, who was the coach at VMI when I went there, but he's now the current coach at JMU. He actually did, he played for 361 when he was coming up. And he also played for the same coach that coached me, John Boyer, at 361. So he would come to games all the time, and John would always reach out to him, like, hey, I got a catcher, like, need to come see him. And I came and watched me, I think, and since my sophomore year of high school, and he just kept hounding me. And he finally got me to commit. And the way I kind of saw it as a high schooler, I was like, you know, if baseball doesn't work out, and I'll have a great education. Because, I mean, everything that I've ever heard of VMI before that was, if you, when you come out, you'll be better off than any other school you went, you're going to. And so far for me, I've definitely seen that.
Well, it's a little bit of a unique place to go, especially as an athlete, because, of course, it's a military college.
Just a little unique?
Well, yeah. I guess I'm underselling it some. So going to a military college would be tough enough. I can imagine it was also quite a load balancing being an athlete while being at a military college. I know one of the guys that I went to high school with was an athlete at VMI. He was there a few years before you, and I talked to him years ago, and he said it was a pretty tough challenge and a unique college experience for sure. So what was that like for you being at a military school and also being an athlete?
Well, yeah, like you said, I mean, balancing sports and academics, and then just the actual, like, the school, like the military part of it, it's tough, but it really, it forces you to grow up, to become a man. And I firmly believe that I would not be in the position that I'm in now, or I wouldn't have been playing pro ball like I was, if it wasn't for me going to VMI. It really forced me to really just get everything straight, like do all the little things right. And honestly, there, I realized that there really are no little things. Whatever you do every day, like, yeah, you like, okay, I can hit the snooze button and fall asleep for another 10 minutes, but that's 10 minutes that I could have went and ran a mile and a half or whatever I could have been doing. And those, being regimented as much as I was at BMI, kind of taught me that, like, yeah, 10 minutes is a long time. Like, that's, you might think like, oh, 10 minutes is pretty short, but that's a lot of time you can really get something productive done. And I've kind of carried that over a little bit. I mean, not as regimented, but I've carried that over into my life as a pro baseball player, and I'm hoping to carry it on beyond that.
Well, all of a sudden, you running around in that rainstorm in Erie.
Makes sense.
Yeah, it makes a lot more sense. I can see a little bit more about where that came from. So it seems like that was that type of mentality and that work ethic. I'm sure you had some of it before you got to VMI, because you probably wouldn't have been at VMI if it wasn't already there. But I'm guessing it was forged a little bit deeper while you were out in Lexington.
Yeah, my parents have always been about working hard. And my dad especially, he'll always tell me, just keep at it, keep doing it. Like, even when I would have bad days at the field or bad days in class or whatever, just keep at it, don't give up, just keep going, you're gonna be okay. And it's worked out for me.
What did you major in? What were you studying while you were at VMI?
I majored in psychology, and I was there for 5 years, so I was able to get two minors as well. I minored in philosophy, and I minored in exercise science.
At AAA, we've seen breakdowns, lockouts, and full stops. 118 years of them. So trust us when we say we can get through anything by navigating it together. See how we're helping to keep you safe. Visit AAA.com/keepmoving.
Well, after you had a really successful career out there with the Keydets at VMI, you went in the draft as a fifth-year senior, you know, not just a senior, but a fifth-year senior after having redshirted a year. Were you pretty confident that you were going to get taken in the draft and get to play professional baseball, being in the position that you were in as a fifth-year senior? You know, senior signs don't have a ton of leverage going into those situations, going into the draft like that.
Yeah, it was really during my fifth year that I really had a good feeling that I would get picked up. just the amount of like questionnaires and stuff that I would get from scouts and whatnot. Like I realized like, yeah, I probably won't get picked up early and I won't get picked up for a lot of money, but they'll give me a shot. I was like, yeah, it's pretty high probability. Cause I mean, I had all those accolades going into coming out after my fifth year. And I think it was my redshirt sophomore year when I started to really get attention. I got attention from one of the scouts with the Brewers because one of our volunteer assistant coach, he actually played with the Brewers, Mike Roberts, who's actually a firefighter now. I've been talking to him quite a bit about it. He's a firefighter in RICO. But I was talking to him about it, and the scout that drafted Mike was kind of after me a little bit. And then the next year, I actually got mono right before the season started, and it kind of dampened my chances of getting drafted after, like, in my redshirt junior year. So I kind of had to play through it anyway, like an idiot. But I did, and I didn't do very well. And then I kind of went to my fifth year. I was able to play in the Cape Cod League that summer after my redshirt junior year. Learned a lot in that league, just playing with a bunch of really good guys. I played with CJ and Osa, who was with us for a little bit. And I played with a lot of other guys that are playing in the big leagues. Kevin Biggio. I played with Ian Happ. I played with countless guys that I played with that are playing on TV right now or getting pretty close to it. But I learned a lot out there. And then I came into my fifth year kind of with a different attitude towards baseball, kind of more free and easy. And I did really, really well. And I think I can't remember if I was third team All-American. The one I'm most proud of is being a finalist for the Johnny Bench Award, which is actually now the Buster Posey Award. I got to meet Johnny Bench. I went out there after I got drafted, and it was so much fun. Johnny's an awesome guy. I love talking to him. I loved hanging out with him for the night, but that was so much fun. But yeah, I kind of had an idea that I would. I didn't know it was going to be the 14th round, but I didn't know what team it would be. But it worked out great that it was the Giants.
But the Johnny Bench Award, being a finalist, that's the top three. Is it three who are the finalists who get to go out there? So it's considered.
Yeah, it's top three.
Top three catchers in the country, in the entire nation, in Division I baseball. That's pretty rare. That's pretty small company to be in.
Yeah, I was super excited about it. Because I remember I when I heard about it, I was actually on the way back with my dad from a workout with the Yankees. We drove up to Staten Island to do a workout with the Yankees, and I was driving back, and I got a phone call from some random number. I can't remember who it was or what number it was. And got a phone call, and they said, hey, you've been selected to be a finalist for the Johnny Bench Award. And I was ecstatic. I was so happy. I was almost a little bit happier about that than I was to get drafted. Because it was something where I was kind of on the watch list for my entire career. I made the semifinalist list, and I was like, man, I really want to make that finalist list. I really want to be one of the top guys in the country because I worked so hard at it, and I would be really proud of this. So, I was really excited about that.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty rare company to get drafted and play professional baseball at all, but there are even fewer people who are Johnny Bench Award finalists, you know, that just three guys a year, 1,000-something guys get drafted every year, at least the way the draft was prior to 2020. We'll see what the draft looks like going forward. But
yeah, who knows how many rounds it'll be.
Yeah, no idea at this point. I guess we'll hopefully find out in the next month or two. Well, when you did get drafted, the 14th round by the Giants, the 2015 MLB draft, what was your draft day like?
Honestly, so I was told by a few scouts that I'd get picked up in the top 10 rounds. And I think I can't remember what teams it was, but I was told by a few of them, like, yeah, we want to get you like in the 8th round or like 7th round or 9th round or whatever. And I'm paying attention to it. And I'm waiting. 10th round rolls through. And I'm like, I didn't get picked up. So it was a little bit, I think it was the next day is when they started it on the 11th round or whatever. And at that point, I was like, I'm so tired of watching this or like keeping up with it. Like, I'm just going to do whatever. So 11th round rolls through. Then we eventually get to the 14th round. I'm just like, I'm over it. I'm like, I'm just going to wait and see where I get picked up. And I'm sitting there and I'm sitting at home. And mom goes, you just got picked up by the Giants. I'm like, what? Did I ever talk to the Giants? She goes, I don't know, but your name just popped up. I'm like, no way. So immediately I started getting phone calls. And I think it was Donnie Suttles who drafted me. And I think Donnie called me pretty soon after that. I talked to him a little bit. And then I just got flooded with phone calls. And everybody was like, oh, you're going to go and play in Richmond. You're going to play in Richmond. Like, that's their AA team. I'm like, yeah, well, it might be a few years. So... But, I mean, come to find out, it was next year that I actually started here, so.
Yeah, it didn't take long. We'll talk about that in just a couple of minutes. But did you realize it as soon as you heard Giants? I mean, I'm sure once people started telling you, but as soon as you heard Giants, did you realize pretty much right away, like, oh, that means I've got a chance to play at home. Their AA team is right here. Or was it, did somebody else have to bring it up and you didn't realize it until later?
I think I did. I met Donnie when I was playing in, I can't remember where exactly we were playing, but it was a series on the road. And he saw me take BP and he asked me to ask for my info, ask for my email address. And he sent me a questionnaire. And I remember thinking back then, I was like, oh, this would be cool to go play for the Giants. They're AA teams in Richmond. So I think that was the first I really thought about it. And then it was kind of later on, once everybody was saying it, I was like, I know Giants are here, but I mean, who knows if I'll make it there that quick. I mean, hopefully I do make it there and play at least a season, but I was lucky enough to play here as long as I did.
When you were growing up, did you come to very many Richmond Braves games or Flying Squirrels games once they came in 2010? Was that something that you did quite a bit as a kid?
Yeah, I would go to the Richmond Braves games quite a bit, especially like July 4th games where they would do all the fireworks and stuff. When they became the Squirrels was when I was basically graduating from high school. So that was when I was about to go out to VMI. And it was actually I remember telling this story. I was at a hot stove event a few years ago, and I was actually sat next to the girl's dad who thought of the name. And I was talking to him. He's like, yeah, that's my daughter. I'm like, I went to high school with your daughter. I remember there being a competition in the newspaper of naming the team that was going to be here. And she actually won it. And I remember going to high school with her. We had a lot of mutual friends, and I remember talking to her dad, and he's like, yeah, that's my daughter. I'm like, no way. The small world.
Yeah, that's pretty funny. So I guess since you left for Lexington, you would have been in Lexington by 2010, that first year. Did you ever get to come as a fan to a Flying Squirrels game?
I did. I believe I went a few times, but for the most part, I was trying to play as much as I could. So, I mean, I'd be at VMI, I'd be playing, and then I'd go out and play summer ball. And I think like there'd be sometimes like in mid to late August, like I would try to make it out to a game. But I think almost every single time I would go out there, it'd get rained out, as it does here in mid to late August.
Yeah, we're still wearing that right now with some of these late afternoon thunderstorms and stuff that roll through.
Yeah.
But hey, it's keeping the grass growing. So
exactly.
Do you have any memories of anything that stands out as a kid coming to the Diamond, watching games as a kid in that stadium where you would eventually be playing on that field?
Yeah, I remember, I think it was, I was playing in, I was playing for Glen Allen, the rec ball league here. And I think they had just made that stadium out there for the World Series that they were hosting. And I was on the team. I can't remember, was it 13? It was 14. 14-year-old World Series. And we had a chance to go out there on the field with the team, like for the national anthem. And I remember thinking to myself, I was like, man, it'd be really cool to play in a place like this one day. I mean, come to find out, I play in an exact place like that. So, yeah, it was cool.
Yeah, that's the dream right there. We see it when we do it. Just about most every game, when you all take the field, the kids are out there next to you for the anthem. We call it the Field of Dreams. But I mean, just to think, you think as a kid, you know, this is going to be me one day. I'm going to be doing this. And then it happened. Like, that was a real thing that got to happen. So, you know, it didn't take long into your professional career before you got to come and play at home at Richmond. Like you said a moment ago, you were part of the season opening group of players that came to Richmond in 2016. 2016, your first full year as a professional baseball player. So maybe it was a little bit of a surprise. At what point at spring training did you find out that you were going to be going to Richmond and playing at Double A?
Yeah, it was pretty surprising. Prior to that spring in 2016, I was actually out there for some workout camp that was before spring training started. And I gotten a call from our coordinator, and he was like, hey, you're going to go to big league camp. And at the time, I didn't really understand what that was, because I mean, it was my first spring training. So I didn't really understand it. So I go there and I'm like, oh yeah, like this is not something that everybody goes to. So I remember going and I was like, man, like this is cool that I get to be here, but I have a feeling it's just because I'm here to catch bullpens. And then I actually gotten into a couple games. I was like, wow, they must actually really think a lot about me. Cause I think that in 2015, after I got drafted, I went to Augusta and I played pretty well. Like, I did well. And then came for, to Instructs and did really well in Instructs. And I guess I must've impressed the right people to get invited there. But, it was kind of in the middle of spring training when the groups kind of started evening out and all the guys were coming down from big league camp to minor league camp and everybody started fizzling out. And I kind of like saw where I was and I was looking at the groups. I'm like, well, is this guy going to go here? This guy's going to go there. Like, I'm like, well, why am I here? Why am I in Richmond and this guy's here? And then and eventually it stayed like that. And I was like, wow, this is crazy to think that I'm going to start in AA when I was like, yeah, I'm probably going to kind of work my way up. But no, I was extremely honored to do it. And I was excited to be back in home playing pro ball.
Your debut for the Flying Squirrels, when you got to come back home and play in Richmond, it ended up being at the Diamond, but it wasn't originally supposed to be. The Hartford Yardgoats were playing their first season. Their stadium wasn't finished being constructed yet. So they moved the season opening series to Richmond. So your Flying Squirrels debut at the Diamond wasn't in front of the normal sold out opening night crowd that we typically see at the ballpark. But I'm guessing you still probably had a few people who came out to cheer you on that night, right?
Oh yeah, I probably had about 30 or 40 people come out. I remember talking to Barney before because he knew. He's like, yeah, he's from Richmond. So I talked to him. He's like, look, whatever, however many tickets you need, just let me know. Like, if you need 30 or 40, just let them know. They're probably going to be up in the upper deck. But if you need like five or six every night, like they'll be and they'll have good seats. So he was extremely flexible with that. Like, and he's as flexible with everybody. Like if when Connor came, and because I mean he's from Richmond as well, he had quite a bit of people come and watch him, and he was always like, yeah, just make sure that they know they're not going to have the great seats. They're going to be up in the upper deck. Like, because obviously you can't give out that many seats because you got a lot of season ticket holders in the same section. But I mean, Parney's been great with it and he handled it great. So yeah, no, I had quite a bit of people come and watch me play.
Well, your real home debut, let's fast forward about a week. And so those games counted as road games. It was really weird. I wasn't here at that point, but we did the same thing when I was with Altoona, where we hosted some of Hartford's home games and there were just a few dozen people in the crowd. It was kind of, it was very strange. But fast forward about a week, the real home opener for you, it had to be just an incredible feeling going out there on opening night, sold out stadium, almost 10,000 people and all that energy in the ballpark. And you're the first ever Richmond native to play for this hometown Richmond team. What was that night like?
It was awesome. And I had a lot of people out there supporting me. And it kind of makes it easier when you're a catcher and you don't really see everybody out there. You're kind of face towards your teammates. If I was a pitcher, I'd probably be a little bit more shaken up. But once I get behind the plate and I'm looking the other way, I'm able to kind of focus and keep my mind occupied on the task at hand. But no, I loved it. It was great. And every time I heard my name announced, it was always an eruption of applause. And I enjoyed it more than anything.
As the hometown guy, the franchise's first hometown native, I'm guessing you probably had a few more media requests and interviews and a little bit more attention than some other guys there that year going into 2016 with Media Day and all this other stuff. It probably felt like a big wave of reporters and all these other things of people who wanted to talk to you there in those first few days. Was it a little bit overwhelming?
Yeah. I mean, I'm not that bad with media. Like I don't mind answering questions. But it turned out to be kind of the same questions all over again. It was like, hey, how's it feel to be home? Like, how does it feel to be starting in AA so early? And I kind of had a dialogue for that already planned out in my head. And I already knew like, all right, this is how I'm going to answer this question. I'm going to hear it a million times. So it wasn't bad. I mean, I wouldn't say it was annoying because I was glad to have the attention, but it was just kind of monotonous. It was the same thing over and over again. It was like, oh, how's it feel to be playing back in Richmond and all that stuff. But after the fourth or fifth time that I was there, those questions started to stop.
Well, hey, you're getting some of them again here today now, 4 years later. So, but this is we're cementing it into the archive for all times. This is
for sure.
This is a definitive look at the career of Matt Wynn through 2019. So
yeah, well, I appreciate it. I'm glad people still want to talk about it.
Now, when you were playing here, did you just live at home? Did you just stay home with your parents and didn't worry about going out and getting an apartment or any of that?
It just made sense to me. I mean, I think Connor did the exact same thing. Either that or live with friends, because it just makes no sense for me to be spending money on an apartment when I'm only there half the time anyway. I mean, we travel so much. I mean, we're at home for a week max, and then we go on the road for 3 or 4 days, 5 days. So it didn't really make much sense for me to get an apartment or try to split an apartment with somebody when I live so close to the Diamond anyway. I'm a 10 to 15 minute drive from the Diamond from the house I grew up in. So it made more sense for me just to stay at home.
As the hometown guy, did you have a lot of players asking you for like the inside scoop on the area, you know, where to eat, where to go, where to go out, where to go fishing? I know that some of the guys that I've talked to, even on this podcast, have said that you would take them out to different fishing spots. So I guess you became kind of the local tourist guide, right?
Yeah. So downtown Richmond, I'm not too like familiar with. I know a little bit of the places, like the normal places where guys like to go out and stuff, but more like the west end of Richmond and kind of out in like the Hanover area, some parts in Goochland as well where you live. I know a lot of places to go fish and well, we weren't able to hunt during the summer, but if we were able to hunt in the summer, I would have taken some guys out there. But yeah, I took Jalen out a few times, took Connor out a few times, and I had a lot of people ask me, and it would just kind of be like, it'd be people that I knew, and most of the fishing spots I go to, I just have to ask permission to go, and usually everybody's like, yeah, sure, you can go. But there'd be some times when I couldn't go, or like people were using the boat or whatever. And I would try to align it with our off days, and I try to ask way in advance, like, hey, can I come like 2 weeks from now? And I would try to make sure all the guys, if they wanted to fish, then they were able to. So
that's a good resource to have. Most of these guys
for sure
don't know anything in these towns, and it's very rare that you have a hometown player on a team like that.
Mm-hmm. Founded in 1996, SICOM is an award-winning IT systems integrator headquartered in Richmond with offices throughout Virginia. Their focus is on mid-Atlantic companies, healthcare organizations, educational institutions, and governments looking to improve their technology return on investment. SICOM is a trusted partner to deliver a range of IT solutions and services that keep companies connected. Named as one of the top workplaces in Richmond, SICOM is also the employer of choice for the best talent in the region and are committed to providing outstanding and memorable service.
You'd only played 36 games as a pro baseball player at that point, and only 20 of them were above the complex leagues and rookie ball and stuff out in Arizona, but it didn't really seem to slow you down. You came out of the gate hot. You hit 320 for that first week or so. And, you know, you talked about having some good success in instructs and getting some time in big league spring training. But was it a tough adjustment coming into double A, a level that a lot of people say is the toughest jump in the minors with barely any professional experience at that point?
Yeah, and I would definitely agree with that, especially the Eastern League. That's a tough league, man. I see a lot of people struggle in this league, and they get moved up to AAA and they kill it. They hit like 350. And I've had a little bit of experience in AAA, and not saying that that means anything, but I was hitting really, really well in Sacramento. And I was kind of just a fill in just because of people were either sick or they went down with injury, and I went in for a week or two. But yeah, no, I definitely believe that the Eastern League is a really, really tough league. It's definitely a pitcher's league for sure. But I tried to handle it as well as I could. I knew that I was there because I knew how to catch and I knew how to handle a pitching staff. So I didn't really stress about hitting too much. I realized that was kind of bonus. Like if I hit well, then that's just kind of adding value to me. But what I realized early on was my job was to catch and handle the pitching staff in the right way. So I really just focused on catching and throwing guys out and doing my job defensively, and whatever came offensively was just second.
Well, that's the case for a lot of catchers. You know, I mentioned it briefly before when I was talking about you grinding out those runs through the rain, but in general, y'all have a lot of things to balance that don't have anything to do with your own development. When you're a catcher coming up in the minor leagues, you got to take care of all these pitchers, you have to catch bullpens, you got to look over all these scouting reports and know how you're going to call a game and all of these things. How do you find time as a catcher trying to develop and trying to work up the ladder to balance all these things that you have to do selflessly for the other people around you? I mean, it's part of your job. It's part of the description of the job for that. But also work on your own hitting, work on your own defensive skills for controlling the running game and keeping balls in front of you and all those things. There's just not enough time to devote, I would guess, into doing everything that goes into that and being a little bit selfish and doing the things that you have to do to make yourself better in your own area.
Yeah, for me, like just naturally, I've always liked being the first person at the field, and that to me gives me the opportunity to actually get work done, like get in the weight room, get a workout in, trying to stay healthy, going out there and doing early work and doing stuff like that. And I've always prided myself on trying to be the first one there and getting there early and getting my work in so that when game time comes, I am ready. I'm ready to go. So basically, to answer your question, you got to find the time and you got to do things that most people don't really want to do to get that time and to get that work in with as little time as you have.
The 2019 season had a few memorable moments that stand out to me that you were in. And one of them came back on May 30th of 2019. You were catching and Connor Overton came in to pitch. And in that moment, you two became the first ever all Richmond native battery, pitcher and catcher, in the history of the franchise. And I'm sure, I don't know if you two were even aware of it in that moment, but for us and the fans, it was pretty cool to see a pair of hometown players out there in front of their hometown fans. What was that like? Because I know you and Connor, I'm sure, had a decent relationship both being from here and having some similar experiences growing up in this area. And that was the first time you two got to work together in a live game in Richmond. Did you even know that that was the case at the time?
I don't think I really realized it. I remember hearing somebody talking about it before it happened or when Connor got sent here, but I didn't really realize it happened until I think it was either the next morning. It was either you or somebody else tweeted it, and I think Connor had retweeted it or liked it or something. I saw it pop up on my Twitter. I'm like, oh, no, that is pretty cool. I didn't even realize that happened last night. But no, it's special, and it's extremely rare that something like that happens. I mean, like you said, it's rare enough to have one guy from the hometown of the team, but to have two guys on it is extremely rare. I don't know if that's going to happen ever again.
Yeah, it might not. I mean, like I said, in 10 years, there have only been two guys who have been from here. And Virginia as a whole is a decent recruiting zone for baseball players. We turn out a few, but it's not like it's Florida or Texas or California where, you know, it's every school's got five guys in the big leagues or something like that. So it's a pretty rare thing. And yeah, like you said, we might not ever see it again, but it was cool in that moment to see, you know, you two get to work together. And, you know, if you're talking about for those kids, like those kids who took the field with you, the Field of Dreams kids and stuff like that, who took the field and stand by you during the national anthem, it's something that they could say, like, oh, this guy that I'm watching pitch to this guy, he grew up just north of Richmond, and this guy grew up just west of Richmond. They're from right here. I could do that too.
Exactly. No, yeah, and it's cool. And every time those kids come out, I always try to talk to them. Like, hey, guys, like, how's it going? Like, what little league you guys play for? Oh, I played for Glen Allen. Like, I went to Tucker, all that stuff. And they're like, no way, you went there. It's pretty funny. It's funny to see their faces like, oh, no way, you're from here? But yeah, I enjoy it. I like to just kind of be around those kind of kids and be able to give them that kind of impression.
Well, there's another moment in 2019. It was August 21st of 2019. And this day stands out as one of the most memorable days of the season for a whole lot of reasons. It was a marathon of a day. Y'all finished a rain suspended game first. And then you played the regularly scheduled game of that night, and that went 13 innings. And then we had to hit the road for, I think it was an 8-hour bus ride to Akron, Ohio overnight. But in that game, you came in to pitch, and you didn't allow an earned run over three innings. And you gave up just two of the three runners that they put out there at second to start extra innings now. And you stranded the one to help set up the walk-off winner in the 13th. But what a crazy night that one was, and you going out there to pitch three innings.
I threw in the first game of the doubleheader, too.
Yeah, that's right.
I threw one pitch, got a fly out, and then I think I can't remember what happened after that. They had already scored those runs, and I think we couldn't score in the bottom half, and they ended up winning. But I might be the first person or the only person last year that threw in the same on the same day of a doubleheader.
No question that you were. Yeah, no question. So you go out there and you're pitching. You're on the mound, and obviously this is not a normal thing for you. You only did it a handful of times over the last 6 years or so, 5 years in your pro career. But you're out there pitching, and are you just trying to get some outs? Are you just trying to get through and get contact and try and get outs and get yourself out of there? Or is the competitive side of you kicking in and you want to make sure that nobody scores?
Yeah, so earlier in the season, I went out there against Trenton, and it was a tie game, and it was like a close one. So I was like, man, I gotta actually try. So I was up there actually trying to throw the ball, and I realized pretty quick that I don't throw hard enough to throw it by these guys. And I think I got a home run hit off of me. So I was like, you know what, next, if I get this opportunity again, I'm just going to go up there and throw the ball as slow as I can just to get it across the plate, let them try to hit the ball out. And if they hit a ball out on 45 miles an hour, good for them. They got some real juice. But so I practiced on the mound a little bit just to like kind of gauge my arm strength and see if I can get it there. Because I remember Joey sometimes he was reaching out trying to catch it before it hit the plate. But I went out there and there was one at bat where I was flipping it in there, and the kid just kept fouling it off. I can't remember who it was, but he kept fouling it off and kept fouling it off, and I was kind of over it, so I reared back and threw it as hard as I could, and he fouled that one off too. And I looked up at the radar gun, it said 87, so I kind of felt good about that outing.
Yeah, I wish I wonder if we have the TrackMan data from that one somewhere, because that stadium radar can be a little iffy. But I wonder. I feel like I remember you getting up close to 90, so that sounds pretty accurate with a bunch of them that weren't even registering at all on the TrackMan.
that was the goal. Throw it slow enough to where the radar gun doesn't even pick it up.
Well, in your time with the Flying Squirrels, and especially last year here for most of the year, you volunteered a lot of your time for community service projects with the Flying Squirrels, whether it was baseball camps with kids or volunteering at the Children's Hospital of Richmond at VCU, Miracle Leagues, Feed More, all these other things that you gave your time to help us go out and do. And at the end of the year, you were the team's recipient of the Community Service Award. So clearly giving of yourself and giving back to the community is important to you, but is it a little extra special and extra important to help out here at home as a representative of Flying Squirrels?
It's always meant a lot to me. And no matter where I was always trying to do whatever kind of community service was out there. And because I realized, like I told you before, when I was a kid going out on the field and looking out there, I'm like, man, I really wish I could be here one day. Like, it means a lot to me to kind of put a good impression on these kids coming out and just really making them want to play just for the love of playing and trying to spread that message across to them. And I of course, being from here, it means a lot more to me than it does anybody else to kind of serve here and kind of just give back to our community. Cause I mean, it's been so good to me. Everybody has been so supportive of me. So I've always thought, and I've always kind of had the point of view of like, if everybody's going to be supporting me, then I need to go out there and support them as well.
Well, we're grateful for it. The work that y'all do to help us in the community. The Flying Squirrels have a really strong representation and reputation in the community. And for the players like you and the handful of other guys who helped out with a lot of those events last year, it goes a long way toward helping us establish that, but also it goes a long way toward helping make impacts in the lives of people around this community, which is really what it's all about. And I'm super appreciative of watching what y'all do to give back, and I know that certainly other people in the front office who you guys help out to go do these events, they're appreciative. There's not a lot of free time during the season. I mean, there's very minimal time, especially for somebody like you who's putting in as much work as you are. So to take that little bit of moment of opportunity for maybe an extra rest or that extra 10 minutes like you were talking about earlier that you could be hitting that snooze button, and to go give back to other people, that's a really commendable thing, and I thank you for taking so much time to do that while you were playing for Richmond.
Yeah, and I got to give credit to the front office and everybody that kind of makes that happen, because I mean, if it wasn't for them, then I don't know if I would be out there. I mean, I've tried to do everything I could to go out there, but I got to give credit to them for giving us the opportunity to give back.
Well, where we sit now, the 2020 season would have just wrapped up, and minor league baseball, of course, didn't happen this year, but the season would have just ended. We'd be finishing up in normal times, but these are not normal times. And well, with that, we saw this year a ton of major league teams had to cut some players throughout their organizations, and you ended up being part of this kind of massive wave of cuts and releases this summer. So your time with the Giants appears to be done. Do you have any idea what's next? I know you talked a little bit earlier in this interview about you're discussing some stuff with the Chesterfield Fire Department, and are you looking to try and keep playing somewhere if somebody will pick you up? Is there any thought about at some point maybe doing some coaching or something like that?
Yeah, so kind of what I'm doing currently, I'm coaching a travel ball team with the Richmond Braves. I believe they're 16-year-olds, and I'm doing some other hitting lessons and catching lessons on the side. Also, I kind of, for me, with the way that minor league baseball is kind of going, I see that they're getting rid of 42 minor league teams. So I do want to continue to play if that opportunity comes up. I've been staying in shape, still doing some baseball stuff here and there. I'm kind of taking my future in my own hands right now. I'm interviewing with Chesterfield Fire, and I'm trying to get, I'm doing, I, I think I'm doing pretty good. I don't want to count my chickens before they hatch, but I'm kind of getting pretty far in the interview process. And that's kind of something that I've always wanted to do. And being a person that likes to serve my community as I have been, that's definitely something right up my alley. And I've been part of a team my entire life, and that's just a perfect career for me. And I'm hoping that I do get an opportunity to do that. But also, I do, if something does come up, it'll be a tough decision, of course. But right now, my goal right now is to kind of be with Chesterfield Fire and hope for the best with that, and be able to serve my community here rather than trying to grind it out and continue that career.
Well, I would say that career path makes a lot of sense for your post-baseball mm-hmm. career if this ends up being the time where that post-baseball life starts. And again, it's mm-hmm. there's still a lot that we don't know and a lot that's going to happen going forward with minor league baseball and with free agents and everything over the next few months, and hopefully we'll have more clarity on that sooner or later, and then hopefully some teams will start getting on the phone and we can start figuring out who's going to be going where and whatever else. But that type of service makes a lot of sense, because you know, going all these years as a catcher where you're having to be so selfless and the things that we talked about before and the work that has to go into that, and also giving of yourself back to the community. I mean, that makes perfect sense for the type of personality that we've seen out of you and the skill set that we've seen out of you for that to be your next chapter. So hopefully that works out, and hopefully we'll be hearing some good news on that front.
I hope so too.
You'll have to let me know. I'll do an update on this podcast if there's any good news to be had there for all the listeners. So
for sure.
We'll make sure to keep everybody updated on what's going on with that. Well, Matt, thanks so much for taking some time to talk and go through your time in Richmond and answer some questions that you've answered a time or two before for some of these, but hopefully with a little bit of perspective now, having been a few years since those first games. And like we said before, it's very rare to get guys from home who get mm-hmm. to play for their hometown team. But I think that we talked about some of it here. I mean, you were more than just the hometown guy in your time here. You had some big moments, and you gave back to the community quite a bit, and just not just the guy who happened to be playing for the team that was in his hometown. And thank you for taking the time to talk about some of that for this show today. I appreciate you taking all the time that you did.
Well, yeah, looking back at it now, I definitely do not take for granted how many times I've been asked how is it playing in your hometown. Like, I'll answer that question a million more times.
Life constantly throws us curveballs, and this year has been full of them. With so many people working from home or driving less, Elephant Insurance believes your rates should reflect that. That's why they've lowered their auto rates to help their drivers save. It's just one more way they've managed to stay flexible while staying true to what matters most, our community. See how Elephant can help you save by starting your quote process today at elephant.com. Elephant, insurance on your terms. And a big thanks to Matt Wynn for giving us some of his time to reflect back on the last few years and so much more. It's not much of a surprise, but after we finished that chat, he had to quickly hustle off because he was catching bullpens for a couple pitchers here in the area to help keep them sharp during this kind of longest offseason ever. And on that note, we have now officially moved into the 2020 to 2021 offseason. The Flying Squirrel season would have ended back on Labor Day if we had played this year, and it's been tough for all of us not being able to hang out with you at the ballpark or over the radio airwaves this summer, but hitting that Labor Day marker just means we're another step closer to getting things back rolling again and hosting ball games for you here at the Diamond. But as it's been all summer, just because we don't have games going on doesn't mean the Flying Squirrels organization is just laying low and waiting for baseball to come back. We've had a lot of fun with our movies in the outfield series, and that continues on into the fall. If you haven't been out for one of these yet, they're a pretty cool and unique experience. You get to sit out the outfield at the Diamond and watch a movie on our video board from the grass of a professional baseball stadium, and it's all carefully set up with health and safety in mind and social distancing procedures in place. So come out and join us for Movies in the Outfield. We've got some great showings coming up. Head to squirrelsbaseball.com/movies to find upcoming showings, tickets, and any other information you need for those events. We've also got a brand new experience starting here in September with Diamond Disc Golf, presented by Woodfin. On Thursdays, we've got a pretty cool disc golf course set up throughout the stadium. Now, our September dates have all sold out, and they sold out pretty quickly, but we will be rolling out some time slot reservations for the month of October at some point soon, so be sure to keep an eye out for those. And all that's just a sample of the stuff we've got going on. There will certainly be more announced as we continue on through the fall and into the winter, so make sure you're following the team on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram to keep up with any updates on that front. That's going to wrap things up for this episode. Thanks so much for tuning in. Thanks to Matt Wynn for chatting. My name is Trey Wilson, and we will talk to you next time on the Funville 9 driven by AAA.
You've been listening to the Funville 9 driven by AAA, the official podcast of the Richmond Flying Squirrels.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.